Thank you. For the record, I'm just going to start because I have to do the transcriptions later. It's easier for me if you can just all list your names the first time you talk. Let's just go through the name list right now, just real quickly so I get that on the reach on the audio. Chuck, do you want to start? I'll go for you. That was Chuck Derrick. Olivia Irwin's on. Might be easier if I do it. Klaus Wedig from the department is on. Virgil Oppenhauer. Okay, Virgil Oppenhauer is here. John Lazowski is here from the AC. Andy Grifka from the department. Mark Richards from the AC. Thanks to always to Kyle Campbell, and it's wonderful to have him back again. He had a restful trip, and we're really glad to have him home. Okay, so Jim Simon. Jim, what hat are you wearing today? Jim, are you there?
Sorry, yes, I'm wearing a blue one today. No, I'm representing Kananaskis Conference. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. The blue hat guy. All right, thanks. Okay, Shane from Lansbury from the department. Jesse Coleman from the department. Jesse, do you want to identify yourself more?
Sure. I am Jesse Coleman. I'm the Subsistence Resource Specialist for the Yukon and Interior region in the Subsistence Division.
Great. Yeah, thank you very much. Al Barrett is on from the Board of Game.
Jim's hat looks black to me and not blue.
No, it's blue to me. Get some glasses. Okay. Hopefully I'll catch people as they come on. I just want to make sure I've got it in the audio. That's the only thing here. We are going to start. Does everybody have a copy of the agenda in front of them? I got to find mine. Hold on here.
Gail, this is Kyle Campbell from Board Support. It looks like we've got one phone caller who just joined, phone number ending in 516.
Okay. Can you identify yourself, 516?
Yep, that's me, Caroline Brown from Subsistence.
Thank you, Caroline. Great to have you. Thank you.
Yep.
All right, good. Great. Let's get started with the agenda. First up is a summary from the Area M meeting. I'm officially calling to order at 6:05.
What did I do?
Virgil, I'm going to let you start on that one, and we're going to try to keep it concise. I know this is going to be hard on you, but go ahead.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
I clicked on something on this computer, and a whole bunch of stuff come on. Let me X out of it.
Ooh.
Okay. I don't know how many people on the call listened or watched the meeting, but there were three full days of testimony, and there were 294 people testified. There was no way to really read what a couple of the board members were going to do that we focused on, but we focused on wood and then also carpenter. I didn't think there was a chance of getting him to vote our way because he's former on the AC out of Cordova, and also he was the CEO of the hatchery group down there, but I didn't say anything about hatcheries at this meeting because I didn't want to lose his vote for sure. Anyway, it didn't make any difference. He voted against us. Like I said, there were 294 people testified. And Dr. Schindler from the University of Washington that's been doing all this research in Chignik and Bristol Bay, and he's been doing some on the Yukon even. He gave a good presentation, and basically what he said is you have to have windows. But there was, of course, the normal area and people are there, plus a few extra area and people were there and crying that we're going to destroy their towns, their schools, everything else. But some of the data that was there on the table was from CFEC. Every Stater made 702,000 in 2021. That's average. And I can't recall just off the top of my head how many other ones were there. But they had, let's see, I looked up, it was even there. The number of people that were issued multiple permits, and it was 125 multiple permits. So they increased the number of commercial fishing by 125 because of the boat decision. That's when half the people in the Pacific Northwest got put out of business. And then also I found where, well, a guy actually from Bristol Bay looked this up for me because we were talking, but he looked up the number of non-salmon permits in Area M and, that were actually active, and it's 225 non-salmon commercial fishing permits were actually fished in 2021. And I know this last month, they did their tenor crab fishery, and I found out at the our salmon treaty meeting that the tenor crab fishery, and I was the one that shared that, the committee that wrote that management plan when they got to start having a commercial fishery again, and it was in 1998, but Duncan Fields helped me do it. He was a staff, or he's a lawyer from Kodiak that represents villages. That's where we put in, I put in daylight only crab pot pulling, and those are the, some of the only crab fisheries left in the state, and the one on Kodiak is the largest in the state. And in Area M this year, they got to harvest 1.7 million pounds, and they got $3 a pound for it. But anyway, they've got all these other fisheries. So after the guy, Dr. Schindler, spoke, and I wanted to be the last one to speak, but someone beat us. Mike Kramer came down. His daughter was skiing in big ski meets for colleges. And when that was over, he came out over to the board meeting, but the testimony lasted for 3 full days, and him and I were next to last, and I listened to it on the computer yesterday, our testimony, because Gail's got all that. She can email it to people that want to hear it, and it's even got an index, so you don't have, you only have to listen to what you want to listen to. But when we testified, we did it together, and our plan was to do like we did when we got the inside closure down at the Copper River about 15 years ago or however long ago it was. Him and I went up together, and because he had his time really prepared, how he wanted to, because he was going to present the legal aspect of stuff in the AC testimony, because we got 10 minutes, and he had his timed out pretty good, but he went about a half a minute over. But so he did the legal part, and I did the history part. And then after that, each one of us did our personal testimony, and he spoke mainly to what they're trying to do to Chignik and a little bit more of the legal stuff about taking their two runs and making it one run and one escape and a goal. And I just...
Yeah, Virgil?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm going to shift over to RC90, and everybody in their pack has in their packet that RC90, which was a amended language for Proposal 136. That's what we wound up with. But
right, it's 190.
RC190. So, right. But Kyle, are you there? Can you bring up one of Joe Spader's posters, the last one that has the three wheels on it?
Could you tell me the name of the file?
It was on the list that I sent you, would be number 11.
I may not have them in the same order. If you've got them in front of you.
And it says Joe Spader, Dr. Joe Spader.
I am sorry, I'm not seeing it immediately in the file you sent me. I've got the RC-190 from member Jensen. I don't see something with Joe Spader in the title.
Okay, this is a chart. I'm going to resend this to you. If you can, hopefully you'll get it. You can put it on right now because this is a very important chart. It illustrates what happened with RC-190. So I'm sending that over right now.
But the you said there's three wheels on it. Yeah, is it the fish infographic?
Yep.
Okay.
Got it.
All right, you should see it now.
There it is. All right, Virgil, do you want to talk to this? Because this says it all.
Okay, okay, status quo is 352 hours. Our proposal would have been, that's for the month of June, would have been 144 hours, which is what I got passed in 2001. And we ended up with 310 hours. And so, and the thing that's most disturbing to me about the whole thing is that Member Wood, I talked to Stan Zaray yesterday, and he's really disheartened about Member Wood. Anyway, I talked to Dr. Wood, and I told him, I said, you know, this is cultural genocide. This is before they were going to vote and everything, a couple days before. I told him, it's cultural genocide, and people can't go to the fish camps. They're getting all overgrown now. I travel the river a lot because of my hunting business. And the fish camps are all getting overgrown. The people can't go to the fish camps. We're having to ship fish out to the villages. And it's just horrible. It's cultural genocide. And he says, well, I'm a Cajun. And you can tell he grew up in Louisiana by his accent. And they did the same thing to the Cajuns. And so then what ends up happening, because I think he fancies himself, I'm just being a... I'm not attempting to be derogatory. I'm just pointing out what my personal opinion is. He fancies himself as the great arbitrator. And so, and he, in fact, he made that statement in deliberations that he's done lots of arbitration for union contracts and other disagreements between people. Anyway, and so he says, but what I did is I got consensus from the group, from the parties. Well, I got consensus from the processor from out of state, from Seattle, except one processor. There's three processors there, two from Seattle and one from Sitka. And he got consensus with the seiners that make over $1 million a year. They came to a consensus that they would move around and not catch the chums. That's the consensus we got. Well, that's what caused statehood. But anyway, I just wanted to point that out, and so we come down 42 hours, I guess, is what we came down. But that was Jensen's RC that did that, RC-190, and it's absolutely, to me, totally disheartening, disgusting, and anyway, unless someone has other, but I want to point out this. Tanarok Chiefs brought the chief and First chief and second chief of most of the villages came to the meeting. They must have had 50 people there. I don't know how many people they had there, but their president was there, the president of ABCP, which is originally from Amonique. I don't know if she still lives there or not, Vivian. But she was there, and they brought a whole bunch of people. And so, and then Charlie Lean was the only person from Norton Sound other than the chair and vice chair of the Southern Norton Sound AC, which are both people that live in Unalakleet, Ivanoff, from the Ivanoff family. Or I know the guy was from the Ivanoff family. But, and then a whole bunch from the Yukon and Kuskokwim, and then of course there was a bunch of people there from Chugnik. people from Bristol Bay. And so our coalition was Bristol Bay, AYK, Bristol Bay, and Chignik. That's our coalition. But with Nelson Cove is part of Area M, but they're in our coalition, not with Area M. So that's what we had. And so out of the, like I said, it was 3 full days of testimony, a lot of heart-wrenching testimony about people talking about not being able to go catch a fish, feed the children, even teach them how to fish. But it's totally disappointing. And something that I maybe shouldn't say on this, but I'm going to go ahead and say it, and that is that our AC rep from Fairbanks that was there, she was going to type my testimony for me, and then her supervisor there came over, and I didn't get a chance to talk to Alita about this, but, and I don't know if she's listening or not, but I hear her boss in Fairbanks, but Caroline's on, I guess. But anyway, I think that was all come about because of the director for Comfish, because he came over and chewed on her a while, too. But they told her, you know, she can't do that. And this is the first time I've ever been to a Board of Fish meeting. And I've been to a lot, many Board of Fish meetings and Board of Game meetings, both, where the staff could not help the AC members prepare their testimony and where they wouldn't even type it up for them. They were not allowed to help you. It's the only time I've ever heard of that happening at a Board of Fish or Board of Game meeting. And I really felt bad about Alita getting chewed out like that or just doing her job. Anyway, if there's any questions, I'm be happy to answer them.
I'm going to, anybody just jump in because I cannot see hands when there's something on the screen. And I want to go back to the screen in a minute. So anybody who wants to jump in anytime, go ahead. But I want to relate the screen to what this chart to what happened. And so as a follow-up to this, of course, everybody in that entire group that went down, contingent that went down there, and the ones that were supporting them from afar, we've still been just as united in talking as we had been before. So one of the things that General Chief's Conference, Chief Ridley, did almost immediately was to write a letter to the legislature, which Shannon Earhart said I could put it on tonight, but I only have the draft. So I'm waiting for this final copy of the letterhead, and we'll have it at the Wednesday full AC meeting. Jim Simon, would you want to speak to that letter very quickly?
Thanks, Gail. Yeah, I'm a little brain dead still, having just returned from Anchorage last night. And I want to thank you, Gail, because it really was a joint effort between the Fairbanks AC and Tenino Chiefs Conference, as well as a number of other people from the interregional coalition and some academics from outside that contributed to the letter that Chief Ridley sent. Pardon me. Perhaps most notable to me is some of the consequence of the letter that Representative Cronk put on the record on, I believe it was Wednesday, at a House Finance Subcommittee meeting on the Department of Fish and Game, and some of the very tough questions that Representative Cronk asked of the commissioner, and pointed out that what Tenino Chiefs Conference had requested in lieu of Proposal 140 was so reasonable and thought that had Representative Cronk been in the room, he would have asked for it much more. So the issue was really focused on providing at least 72-hour windows of unmolested chum salmon passage through the Area M fishery districts in order to contribute to better chances of getting reaching escapement goals in chum salmon. The letter acknowledged that the intercept fishery nor the bycatch fishery is responsible for the chum salmon population, you know, stocks decline, but those two fisheries are the only thing that are within human control to try to help promote the conservation of Western Alaska chum salmon, and requests, you know, a special meeting called for by the governor or the legislature, et cetera, to reconsider the board's actions on the proposal with, you know, that resulted in only a 12% reduction of commercial fishing time. And it really, one of the items, I agree with virtually everything that Virgil said about the meeting. I think what also concerned me was the attention, the stated neutrality of the commissioner's office and the department and the Division of Commercial Fisheries, and yet the insistence of providing the commercial fishery with as much self-management of themselves as possible in order to help conserve chum salmon, based on the premise that reduced fishing time would make the commercial fleet unselective in their harvest and compromise their abilities to avoid chum salmon interception. Fortunately, but unfortunately, a minority of the board built very strong records about the subsistence priority obligations and the obligations under sustained yield to meet escapement. And so I think that is, as I was speaking Saturday with now retired subsistence research director Jim Fall, you know, he was commenting on what a forceful and great Board of Fisheries chairwoman that we have with Mark Carlson Van Dort. And so that was an interesting historical perspective that I wanted to pass on to you. I think with that, these efforts are really checking every little minor administrative box. I don't know that we can hold our breath expecting that there's going to be some calling for a special board meeting, but I would defer to Virgil and others who have a lot more experience than I do in these kinds of unusual circumstances. So I think I'll just stop it there and try to answer any questions that I can.
Yeah, Jim, this is Gail. Before we go to questions, I first of all want to thank you for your incredible efforts down there along with everybody else. I mean, it was just phenomenal watching all you guys. And then second, you're absolutely right about the chair, Mark Carlson Van Dort. She is doing an outstanding job. She has some epic commentary on the record that we are getting transcribed. And there's a couple of days that that are going to be fully transcribed and for distribution. And I think BSFA is doing that. So I think there's a lot of things, both listening to the meeting and then in retrospect, that we need to pull out of there to really emphasize all the points that we're going to be going into at this point, going forward. And with that, if there's any more questions, if there's any questions for Jim, let's do that. And then I want to go into related action item here.
Yeah, Gail, this is Al.
Go ahead, Al.
Yeah, so, yeah, I agree a lot with what Jim said. And I think some feelings were hurt down there. I think Mr. Wood, or Member Wood, you know, he thought he had the RC that was going to save everybody and didn't even make it out of the barn, and he got his feelings hurt really bad, and so he got on the defensive right away. But the key thing that I think that turned some of the, you know, like Member Jensen and Member Heimbach's decision, the commissioner asked a couple times at least, you know, what should the cap be set at for chum so he can take – no, so he has justifications to make his EOs, you know, and I thought it would have been a perfect time to say, you know, something like 75 or 100,000 cap, because I think, you know, that's all he was looking for. And, you know, and I agree with all of you. Member Van Dort was just outstanding on building a record, and it's going to come to benefit us sometime in the future, I believe. But I'm thinking, you know, in hindsight, it's hard being a member and thinking on the fly when you're in deliberations and the commissioner's asking something, you have your mindset kind of set. You don't actually have all the time to disseminate what somebody's really asking or what somebody's really wanting. But it would have been interesting if, you know, all of a sudden, you know, member Van Dorn or one of the other two members, Dan Zaray or Mackenzie Mitchell, would have said, yeah, Commissioner, we're going to set a 100,000 thumb cap on these windows, because he made a very valid point. What happens if the trunk room comes in between these windows and there's an opener? What do you want me to do? What's the cap or what's the number of chums that you want me to start an EO on? And I thought that was a very valid point, and I thought it was very cagey of the commissioner. And, you know, as board members, it's hard to react when you have something in front of you like that. And I was just curious if Jim had kind of the same thought, or even you, Gail, or Virgil, that were down at the meeting.
Well, I'm going to make a quick comment, and then I'll give it back to Virgil and Jim. That chum cap was brought up several different times in different places. The numbers floating around, from the lowest number we heard was 350. Well, although I think there was a brief moment in time when the commissioner said 250, but let's say 250 up to 600,000 was the chum cap. And I think a lot of us really felt like we don't have trust in chum checking. And that would really encourage chum checking. So it was like the devil in a deep blue sea on that particular issue. But it did not get the airtime that it should have gotten. You're correct in that. Virgil, go ahead.
Yeah, I, well, in fact, Member Wood asked me about that same issue. And I told him, well, I RC'd five of my fish ticket printouts that I got for between 1990 and 2000, I read off some of that. One guy caught 8,000 something sockeye and 80 something chums, and another guy caught almost 8,000 sockeye and 8 chums, and then some other fishermen caught just about an equal amount, and sometimes caught more chums than sockeye that they sold. And so that was my answer to that. And you can't, is Mike Kramer on? If he's on, he needs to speak to this issue, because he spoke to it, because he was asked that issue, because him and I were up there for 36 minutes. I was going to say that a while ago, and I don't think I quite got to it. But him and I were up there longer than any other AC by far, and they asked us a lot of questions, and the commissioners asked him about that, or I think it was the commissioner asked him, someone did, one of the board members or the commissioner, and he said, this will be the only case I ever know of where an extraction business or industry, an extraction industry, I think was the words he used, is allowed to police itself. And that is basically what they wanted to do. And there was a lot of discussion about that. They need to move around. To me, that's total BS. Every fisherman and every hunter and everyone on this call right now knows, that does a lot of hunting and fishing, that you have your favorite spots you go to, and that's where you're going to go, and that's where you've been the most successful in the past. And they can't tell me that they need 88-hour openings or 72-hour openings to find a good place to fish. That's just an absolute lie, in my opinion.
Virgil, you're right, and I think we've hit on a really good paper we need to write. But Charlie Lean has something to say. So, Charlie, would you please go ahead?
Yeah, thanks. To the question of triggers and what the commissioner said, I talked to him also on the sideline there and I, as a former manager, you know, used to really wish that I had distinct triggers, but the job says, you know, it's a judgment call, and he has the authority to make those decisions without a trigger. The problem with the trigger is it's too much like a cap. You know, if you're seeing a high chum proportion in the catch, you need to be able to make that decision and do it now. And you know, he could have led that conversation and said, okay, if I see 100,000 chum in a in a whatever it is 60-hour window, I'm gonna pull some hours on the next period or something. You know, he could have and he still can make that determination. And I told him so. It's one of the only conversations I got with the commissioner. But that's the point. And I should introduce myself. I'm the chair of the Northern Norton Sound Advisory Committee here in Nome. And I greatly appreciate the opportunity to listen in. We're having a meeting of our own in 2 weeks on the subject and others. I did a rant about it, Nome, and Nome goes nuts for a while. So I won't get a chance to really bring my AC up to date for a couple, 2 weeks. So
Thank you so much, Charlie. And as a former dog musher who had a team on the Iditarod at one time, I totally get that story. But thank you. Thank you for your comments. Thank you for everything you did in Anchorage and all the insights that you've had lately that we've learned from. I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
So I still can't see hands. So anybody needs to jump in before we go on.
Yeah, Gail, this is Al. I'll just say one more thing. Yeah, I agree with Charlie. I mean, Charlie was really great at the meeting. It just seemed like we may have that, you know, and Mike Kramer was really good in holding the, you know, holding the line very strong and not wanting to compromise. And if you wanted to compromise, use another proposal to do it. But I'd be curious to see if one of the board members did say, you know, if it's in between windows and it appears that, you know, 100,000 chums are being captured already, that, you know, I think the commissioner was just looking for guidance that would give him, you know, he's in a rock and a hard spot. But if he had the board's intent that, you know, and I'm just using a number, 100,000, because it's really low, and it's really important to get that, you know, through Dr. Schindler. You know, it's really important every king counts, and the people in the Yukon really pointed that out, that, you know, so 100,000 is not unreasonable. If we see that happening, it just gave backing to the commissioners, you know, closing, you know, the next windows or, you know, restricting some more opportunity on that fishery.
Yeah. I think a lot of what you said. And I was trying to make notes pretty fast. I think that's a good segue, if nobody else has any other comments, to going into the next discussion on what we're doing here. And there's a question. Eva, you had a question. You want to talk to that real quick, your question?
I remember on the day Sunday when Mara asked what the average chum run, and she was like saying without the year 2021 to like as well. I mean, so she said it was like the staff biologist said it was 234,000 average, and if they set a 300,000 cap by June 18th, that doesn't even make sense to me. I feel like we should have talked more about that number too, especially because she was bringing it up and giving people an opportunity, but it was kind of out of our hands at that point.
That's a good point. Does anybody want to respond to that?
This is Virgil. Yeah, I feel the same way Eva does. It was a waste of time. That part was.
Yeah.
Those guys, they want to keep being millionaires and make millions of dollars, and they don't give a damn about anyone else. And to me, it's a societal decision.
You're right.
That's what it is, to destroy the culture of subsistence on our interior rivers. That's exactly what it is, and it's criminal. The way I look at it.
Hey, Virgil, you're right. I think a lot of us agree with that completely. And it's criminal what it's doing to the salmon itself.
Right.
So thank you for that. but I think we could segue into this Cook Inlet sports fishing.
Gail, this is Al. Let me just say one more thing.
Go ahead, Al.
This is one of the first very few meetings I'd listened to on the Board of Fish that sharing the burden was never brought up. And it's easy to see that they're not sharing the burden of reduction or conservation in this situation. So that it was really odd. And just to follow up on that, you know, Proposal 119, when it came up, it was really, really odd that Member Jensen was all of a sudden thinking about the people after that fishery. That fishery was, that Proposal 119 was talking about a methods and means, and basically these fish were deep into these fjords or big bays. And he was all of a sudden concerned about people catching fish before they got down, I say downriver, but down uses. And I was like, really? Now you're going to bring that up? And all of a sudden it's an issue with what somebody else could catch downriver or down in the migration of the salmon. I don't know if anybody else caught that, but I just couldn't believe it when I heard that. And you can listen to it on Proposal 119.
That's a good advice, Al, and I will go back and listen to that one. Thank you very much.
Well, let me see one other thing about this part of it, and that is one of the things I spoke about in my testimony for the AC. I think I did it then, but I spoke about the allocation criteria that was written by the legislature to begin with as a result of the controversy in between AREM and AYK in 1990 or 91. Also, the crop policy was written in the meeting in the spring of 92 after myself and town chiefs and Kowarik got over 10,000 signatures and sent to the governor's office. Anyway, on the allocation criteria, number three is that they're supposed to address in deliberations, and Jensen, he is insulting when he does this. Number three is, does it provide for family consumption of salmon? That's number three. This, we don't have any family consumption of salmon. And number four was alternative fishery resources. And that's when I brought up and I told him. And I read from the CEF's, the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, that those people have 225 other permits that they fished last year besides salmon. I mean, those were giant issues, and this issue right here, the controversy between Area M, which is the only fishery in the state that gets to fish like this, not on in-season runs or set by the salmon treaty, the only one in this state, why they have to be prima donnas, they still have their own local fish to fish if they want. In July, August, and September, they can go fish their own local fish, but they don't want to fish their... Well, some of them do fish their own local fish. That's why they're millionaires. But anyway, it's just so damn frustrating, I can't believe it. And they have absolutely no ethics or morals. And I'll say that to every damn one of them right to their face.
Well, Virgil, I would say it a little differently, but I think you're right, because a lot of us know a lot of people down there, and I think it's a mixed bag. But I think the issue is even people who live in Sandpoint that I've known for years and years, didn't understand how bad it was in the AYK. They seem to really not grasp that and were surprised at every turn. And that really surprised me as well. Before we go on, with phone number 265 identify themselves? 265? Last three numbers.
Hi, Gail. It's Sam Decker with Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you.
Okay, so with that, there's an article that came out that most of you have seen about the sports fishing shutdown in Cook Inlet for king salmon, but it's also doing much more than that. And is there anybody on here who wants to speak to that action, because this really relates to what we're dealing with in Area M on two different levels. But if somebody online wants to speak to that action that was taken, please jump in right now.
This is Virgil. I want to speak to it.
Go ahead.
Because I know what's going to happen. The East Side Setnetters are going to get shut down probably tomorrow. Or maybe they put out an EO today doing it. But they'll get shut down also because they harvest those king salmon as well. And so what will happen then is they will put in a petition to the board, which they did when I was on the board, but it wasn't over the king salmon. They put in a petition because they wanted to catch more late-run sockeye and early-run coho. So they put in a petition to fish, to have a pink salmon fishery. So I went through all the data of when the pink salmon showed up and the average harvest and et cetera, and I says, okay, I know what you guys are up to. You really want to fish for late-run sockeye and early-run coho, and you don't really care about the pinks. But if you want to fish for the pinks, I can tell you how you can do it. You can do it with a dip net, and then you can release all the other salmon you catch, the coho, even if there's a stray king, and the sockeye, release them alive. And so that is how the Lower Yukon's been fishing for the last 10 years. And we fish on the Yukon with padded fish wheels, no wire on them, same mesh for the webbing on the baskets, padded with foam rubber chutes, and then you got to have some kind of a device. And most people use a plastic toboggan to slide over when a king salmon gets up, man the fish wheel, and so it goes right back in the river. That's what they, because whenever they come up with that, that's what I'm going to recommend to our board members from here, that they amend their damn petition and say, well, yeah, we'll let you fish, but you're going to have to do it with the dip net and release all the king salmon alive. But that's what...
I want to hear that conversation.
We have it for 3 years. Your grandma got fish for 3 years. Did it for 7 years on the Yukon.
Yeah. No, that was good advice, Virgil. For everybody's information who don't know this, the East Side Setnetters have a paired restriction with between their late sockeye run and the king salmon run. And because that's why they're going to be impacted. Does anybody else want to speak to this proposal? Because I think there's a couple of things in here that I want to get to in a minute. But I want to introduce Nancy Hiltrand, who's on today from Homer. And thank you for joining us, Nancy. We work with Nancy all the time. She's just a powerhouse, and we just really appreciate all her efforts in many different fisheries levels. And she's very involved in the Cook Inlet issues. So, Nancy, did you want to comment on that Cook Inlet shutdown? Not to put you on the spot.
I'm mute. Yeah, thanks. I'm really happy to listen in here and hear what happened at the board. And thanks everyone that went and did all that work up there. My gosh, what a lot of work. But yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm real happy that they've shut down the king salmon. I mean, it's what they had to do in the early 70s, and so we're going to have to do some really heavy-duty thinking here to make sure we can try to at least get escapement. So anyway, thanks so much. Listening in.
Thank you, Nancy. Appreciate it very much.
This is Virgil. I want to congratulate Nancy on getting on the board of directors for the worthless hatchery system down there.
Oh, Virgil, that's a firestorm that Nancy will have to relate to as it's unfolding right now. So, yes, this is our own reality show here. It's really amazing. And and who was it, Nancy, that you and Sam was it that had that letter in Anchorage Daily News?
Yeah, Wes Humberg, he's a drifter in Upper Cook Inlet, and we both got on the Cook Inlet Aquaculture Board, and it's they're not real happy about it, but we just told them we're going to make sure that we tell the truth, and So anyway, we have a financial committee coming up on Thursday, and it's not looking very good for them. So we'll see see if they can pull it off. But it's been a lot of damage to a lot of fisheries from that group. So it's we're gonna do the best we can. But anyway, quite the show.
That's quite. Thank you, Nancy.
Yeah, Gail, this is Al. I congratulate her too. I don't know how she got on, but it's quite the feat. Congratulations, Nancy.
Yeah, no kidding. Thanks, Al. Okay, so with that, the two things that connect to Area M on this proposal, number one, or not proposal, but this action. This emergency action is something we should have done at Area M and did not. This is something that we should be considering as a future action. The real problem is that we don't have those Chinook stats like we should have. We have some of the harvest numbers. We don't have any of the genetics. And there was a reason for that. And Virgil, can you explain the reason in 3 minutes?
The reason we have no genetics on the king salmon is there's two reasons. The department is worried that a bunch of those king salmon are transboundary river king salmon with the treaty. And some of them are endangered species king salmon from the Columbia River system. And that's why they don't want to know where those king salmon would have went if they didn't get caught. But Area M has been testing an average. It was at this meeting. I think he said the average, 10-year average is 12,000 a year. But they're catching a considerable amount of king salmon. And they have zero king salmon spawning areas in the South Peninsula. None whatsoever. And so that's just more of a different species that they intercept. And the Cook Inlet guys, I talked to Reuben tonight from the Kenai River Sportfish Association, and they, you know, they were really following our issue and supporting us. And part of the reason is because they know that they're catching king salmon that are probably headed for their river. But anyway, that's the situation with that.
Yeah, thank you, Virgil. And so that relates back to the letter in front of the legislature right now from Chief Ridley. And that is one of the action items in that letter was to request a legislative support to a line item appropriation to the department for same-day genetic lab, a test fishery, in that June intercept and the post-June fishery, separate from the concurrent genetics studies that are going on right now, not part of that, and that Chinook should be included in that test fishery because we do not have enough Chinook information. And that is related to the Port Moeller test fishery lab up on in the line between Bristol Bay and Area M, and that is the it's a floating lab that gives same-day genetics on the sampling that they do, which they wanted. They've had it for 3 years, I think, now. Is there anybody from the department or Charlie Lane that can speak to that test fishery very quickly? Charlie, do you have information on that?
Say it again.
The test fishery at Port Moeller. Do you have any particular information about that? I know I sent around an article, but this is what we're hoping to establish for the intercept.
So that idea. So they have a genetics lab in a box in a 20-foot container van.
Yep.
And they can sample the fish as soon as they come on board, and run. Get a genetic composition of the catch. That was kind of a feasibility study. So Port Moeller is the early warning system for the Bristol Bay Run. So they ran that last year to see if it could be done. It worked. Now they're looking at how to do that on the trawlers and have a shore-based sampling scheme. So they're going to do the near Alaska Peninsula, the the catcher boats, not the catcher processors, but the catcher boat fleet. And it sounds like that's on track for this summer. And you know, it looks as if it worked on one boat. Now it looks like it could work for a smallish fleet. The next step, logical step, would be same boats on the area.
Yep. Thank you. That was a perfect connection. I appreciate
okay.
it. Thank you. Anybody else? This is something that we'll bring up Wednesday at the full AC meeting for us to write a letter of support to follow up to Schieffer Lee's letter. And any more discussion on this from anybody?
Yeah, Gail. Gail, this is Jim.
Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I just think it's important that we all realize the challenges that this endeavor involves because, you know, like Virgil said, they don't collect let me stop for a minute. When I am going to say some critical things about the department, I just want the department staff that are on this call to realize that I am not talking about you. And I think IAYK region is very fortunate to have the staff that we have working and managing our fisheries. And I just want to say that up front. But the department on a broader scale is really not interested in having certain kinds of information. And I think we all need to keep that in mind, that there will likely be resistance to this effort to get this in-season genetic stock ID process going to help ensure our escapement goals are met, et cetera. Because frankly, the result would likely result in reduced commercial harvest and sales. So just like what the state of Alaska is currently doing in appealing the Superior Court decision to the Alaska Supreme Court, now challenging that there is no need for the Department of Fish and Game to provide the best available information to the Board of Fisheries or to the public, and that it is okay for them to withhold information that they have acquired. And that's what is at heart of the ongoing litigation in the Sitka herring case being appealed to the Alaska Supreme Court. So it's not a surprise that we now know the state's position about the best use of scientifically collected information. So we need to be extra vigilant in pursuing this particular project that Fairbanks AC and Chief Ridley are asking for to help better manage the ARIAM interception fishery. Thanks.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate that very much. And just so you know, the two things, I totally concur with you on your comments about staff, ADSMG staff. We are really fortunate to have people up here that we have, and I want to thank all of you. And then, secondly, the Fairbanks AC has not voted on this action yet. I'm assuming they will, but that's not me. So on Wednesday, we will have bring that up. And so, are there any AC members who want to address that right now?
Yeah, this is Virgil. I want to just add a little bit to what Jim Simon said. And that is, in the early 90s, after they upped the Trump cap to 900,000, we got everyone, you know, Yurgfoot got everyone together on the Yukon, and then Norton Sound was involved as well, in the Kuskokwim, and we got the interior delegation, and then we got town chiefs, and we got the Bush caucus, all supporting doing genetics on the ARIAM fishery. And that's whenever Lisa Steeb did the genetics in 93 and 94, but that's how we got the money. And we got to remember, we had Jack Coghill from Nenana as the lieutenant governor, and that's how we got the money to do that genetics. It was straight political. The Westford staff was dead set against it. I'm positive they were. But anyway, that's how we did it. And so nothing against our local people. I see Alita's on. But anyway, that's what happened back then. And what Jim Simon's saying is some of the things that happen, you know, we're not trying to be prejudiced against anyone. We just want conservation to work is all we want to do. That's why we wrote the sustainable salmon policy. But that's all I got to say about that. I just wanted to point that out. That's how we got the money back then, and that's how we're going to have to get the money to do it now. We're going to have to get all the Bush caucus and the Fairbanks or Interior delegation, and we ought to be able to get a bunch of the Cook Inlet delegation to support doing that, because they're getting affected too. They can't go catch king salmon anymore and eat it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Virgil, and you really hit on the note that I, in all my years, which is considerable now, I have never seen such a strong coalition all over Northern Alaska, solid coalition. It's pretty amazing to me. So, and it's even more amazing that it was so ignored. But I think they just wakened the proverbial sleeping giant. So, thank you all. I know John Siegfried's on here. He's the chair of the Fairbanks AC, and Mark Richards is the vice chair for the game side. Do either one of you, I guess what I want to say right now is that I'd like to put that on the agenda for Wednesday if I forget that, to have that discussion about support for that action. So I just, do either one of you have a comment on that?
Yeah, Gail, I think John is gone. This is Mark. I certainly don't have a problem with it.
Okay, great. Thank you, Mark. All right. Well, with that, I think we need to stand down for about 10 minutes maximum, because we do have to go into deliberations. And those of you who are not really interested in the statewide deliberations, feel free to drop off, but you might find it interesting. And I think it's going to go relatively quickly. So we'll stand at 7 o'clock, come back at 7:10. Thank you.
Charlie, a question. Charlie, if you can find those pictures of the dog sleds or the dogs pulling the churn drills, it would be neat if you could put that on the computer for us so that everyone could visualize that, and that all those dogs got fed, lived on salmon.
Okay, I'll have to consult with my brother who has most of the pictures. Okay. Yep.
Okay, Kyle, are you on?
Yes, Gail.
Okay, thank you. I need to put on the screen the list for the proposals. I hope I sent that to you. You know, I may not have sent that to you.
No, I think you did. I've got it here.
It's from the minutes from the last meeting. That's where it is.
Oh, you don't want the statewide proposals? You're still talking about?
The statewide proposals need to be on standby, but I want to look at that list that's in that, that's at the end of that agenda. That was our action items for.
Okay, give me one second.
Okay. So if you just pull up the agenda, it'll be at the bottom.
Did
Sorry, Gail. I might need you to explain what you're asking for a little bit more clearly. I was just finishing.
Look for today's agenda.
Yeah, I've got the agenda open. What list of proposals are you looking for?
On the second page of that agenda is the it's not on here.
Not on the agenda I've got from you. But are you looking for the proposals that were discussed?
It's for the minutes from the last meeting. I apologize.
No problem. I'll pull that up.
Yeah. I apologize. I knew I had it somewhere. Okay, there we are. So it is 7:10. We're going to call back to order. And I see John Siegfried's back with us. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. John, Wiz, are you still on?
Yeah, I'm here, Gail.
Okay, so we have 6 AC members. That's good. And, of course, this will go to the Fairbanks, the full AC, on Wednesday of this week, and to vote on the final comments for all of us. And then they will go immediately to the Board of Fish as an RC for this statewide board meeting, because most of the other ACs already have their comments in. The public comments or the AC comments, so which we did not do because we were so busy with Area M. So that's the process right now, and if we can get started, I want to either confirm or change our position on each of these proposals as we go through them. There's a few at the end that I know are going to require considerable conversation. So starting with 87, which is define eel stick. Does anybody want to change that recommendation to support? It's a department proposal and mostly housekeeping. And all of this is in your minutes that I sent out earlier. Okay, I am going to assume by silence that we have unanimous consent to recommend support. Speak up if you object. Okay, 153, we recommended a take no action. Does anybody object to that recommendation? Okay, number 82, that was an RC 56 that Chairman Mark Carlson Van Dort, there we go. So, we recommend support on that, and if anybody has an objection, let me know. Okay, going to Proposal 154, we recommended taking no action. That was on first name germs. Any objection to that recommendation? Number 155, we recommended TNA also, but this one that might require a little discussion. Virgil, did you want to speak to that one? Because other proposals down after this are going to speak to it more directly on the spear guns, but I think you had a question on 155, is that correct? Virgil? Okay, he might not be back yet, so we can go back to that one later.
Oh, I just couldn't figure out how to unmute.
Okay.
Because that thing's on there.
You need a big red button for you. Go ahead.
No, not really. I don't really have anything to say about it. My grandson likes to spearfish. But he just got one of those things that's got a rubber band that he hooked on.
Yeah, Hawaii sling, right.
Yeah, Hawaii sling. He's got it.
Okay. So we're going to just recommend a TNA on that one.
Yeah.
Okay, number 156, prohibit the use of belt-soiled, sold wading footwear while personally used fishing in fresh water. This is a housekeeping by the department. it goes along with similar regulations, and we recommend support any change on that.
Gail, this is Al. How is that different from Board of Fish passing them as passed in the past about felt soles?
Well, they've done it in sports fishing, but they didn't put it in personal use. That's my
gotcha.
Yeah. Is anybody want to correct me on that?
I think you're right, Gail. I remember when they put it in sport fish, for sport fishing.
Yeah, it's been a sport fish for a time.
Yeah, this is Jim. Yeah, Gail, the last maybe two meetings ago when this came up, I did have my reg book open and confirmed that's correct.
Okay, great.
So, Al, it's been done for the other fisheries, but personal use had been left out. So I think it is truly housekeeping.
Is it an issue besides housekeeping?
No, it's not an issue, I don't think, for the department. But, I mean, it is in the sense that it creates a problem. People do get Elodia on their footwear, and that spreads the Elodia as well as...
I understand the concept and why we pass it in the sport fisheries.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
What, do you think there's somebody that's using the loophole and saying, well, I'm personally use fishing, so I'm going to use my belt sole?
I see what you're saying. No, I think it's just people do it because they don't.
Yeah, so it's just pure housekeeping.
Yeah, I agree. I think so. Anybody from the department want to challenge that concept or speak to it? Speak out.
That's my understanding. Just housekeeping.
Okay, great. Yeah, thank you, Shane. And I cannot see hands, so please just jump in. 157, we recommended P&A on that one also. I had a comment on that, but not applicable to the Fairbank safety, so we're just going to P&A that.
Yeah, Gail, this is Chuck.
Go ahead, Chuck.
Yeah, well, I guess what irks me a little bit, though, is here you've got the commercial guys requesting that they put an annual limit on the personal use fishery, but then on the other hand, they want to be able to, they might have to understand they can only use their boat in one limited entry permit fishery, and they can't use it in a second one.
Depending on the fishery, the issue is gear type, not so much the boat. Your boat can have lots of different gear types, but you cannot prosecute another gear type during the same time. You can't have two at a time. So therefore, you can't have same gear and gillnet gear operating at the same time. Usually, they don't want you on boat at all. And also, you cannot sports fish while you're on a commercial boat.
Can you, let's say you have a drift gillnetter, can you, like, drift gillnet in the Prince William Sound fishery by Cordova and then move to a different fishery and use your drift gillnet gear there?
Absolutely, but you'd have to have, you'd have to have a permit for that fishery. But that's
so what exactly are they asking for here then?
That's a good question. Would you bring that up on the language for that, Kyle? 157? Because I forgot.
Sure, just give me one moment. I'm sorry, I've got Virgil's same conundrum. When I'm sharing screen, I've got so many things up, it's hard to get to the mute button.
Yeah, right. right.
Hey, Gail, this is Klaus. Sorry, I lost you for a while, so I apologize if you had a question I couldn't answer.
Oh, okay. I think we're good, Klaus.
Okay.
I think Shane picked up.
Do you have, you had a question about Proposal 157?
Yeah.
So I have the staff comments in front of me.
Oh, good. Thank you.
So I could read what the proposal would do. Based on our staff comments,
yes,
would that be beneficial?
That
okay,
would be
sure. Yeah. So it says, these would repeal or modify regulations requiring fishermen who hold the salmon net permit for more than one area to annually designate a single area where they intend to fish. Proposal 1.7 would allow holders of any CFEC Salmon Limited Entry Net Permit to register and use any combination of these permits each year, while Proposal 158 would allow a CFEC Limited Entry Bristol Bay Drift or Set Net Gill Net Permit holder to also register use of the CFEC Limited Entry Salmon Net Permit in any other area of the state. That's one long sentence.
Yeah.
So, well, hopefully you can understand that. When it gets to be such drawn out, it's hard to understand.
Yeah, no kidding.
And the department is neutral on this proposal because they are unlikely to impede the department's ability to manage for separate escapement goals or sustained yield. However, the department is concerned about additional regulations that would make it more difficult for a person to acquire a permit and enter a new fishery by creating additional competition and demand for available permits.
That is a very valid comment. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And I think that I would be inclined to oppose this on that very observation.
Well, this is Chuck. Well, I was just chuckling, but I think if they can... If they're allowed to do this, then they should have an annual limit, too.
Uh-huh. You're not going to bite me on that one.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'm going to go back and recommend that we oppose this based on the department's comments.
This is Chuck. I agree.
Okay. So will all the AC members who are on the line please signify that by either saying something or just staying silent, and I'll make that unanimous. Okay. I can't see hands, so if anybody wants to say something. Chris, did you have a comment? Okay, if we go down to 158, for some reason we didn't take up 158 and 159, so we do need to see those on the actual proposal.
Gail, the stat, what I read to you addressed both proposals 157 and 158 in the staff comments. They combined them.
Okay, that's good to know. All right, based on that information, what is the recommendation of the group of the AC?
For Chuck, it's the same as 158. I mean, they're basically the same proposal.
Okay. And maybe that's what we talked about last time. I just didn't put it in there. And other AC members? Okay, we're going to consider that unanimous opposition. All right, 159. Closed commercial fishing for a given species within 1/4 of a mile of any area closed to support fishing for that species. And we supported that last time. Is there any change on that? Okay, I'll say by unanimous consent, we still support it. Number 160, we wanted to do more research on this. It was requires surrender of proceeds gained from sale of wild king salmon caught in hatchery terminal harvest areas. Mike Kramer was really keen on this, but since he's not here tonight, he will be Wednesday night. But
Nancy Hiltren, are you still on? Did you have a comment on this proposal?
I'm just reading it, so I'll to require an opener intended immediately record and then surrender the sale price of the wild feeder king into the state. I don't see why they shouldn't do that. But I'd have to think about it. Sorry.
Yeah, no, thank you. I think we're all doing it. Is there anybody from the department? They can speak to 160 and then or read out the department comments.
Yeah, sure. This is Klaus. I can kind of, I'm sorry, I just looked at this one here. As far as what the effect of the proposal do, I could do that and then read you the department comments. What I'm going to do is read the department comments first, our position, and then read you the effect. So see if that helps explain more clearly.
It will.
So the department is going to be opposed to this proposal. This proposal would likely not reduce the harvest of wild king salmon in THAs. If there is a conservation concern with harvest of wild king salmon in THAs, the department can use EO authority in time area, mesh restrictions, etc., to limit king salmon harvest. So, and it says this proposal would largely be unenforceable because wild king salmon cannot be readily distinguished from hatchery-produced king salmon. So they're saying they would prefer to use their EO authority to manage for sustainability regarding king salmon. They can't identify them. And so the effect, it says hatchery and wild king salmon cannot be distinguished visually, and the harvest of wild king salmon would likely not decrease. King salmon are produced by hatcheries in Alaska, Canada, and the southern U.S., and not all hatchery-produced king salmon are marked with Navajo fin clip and easily identifiable. Regardless, some wild king salmon are also marked with an adipose fin clip. This mark alone would not be absolute in distinguishing between hatchery and wild king salmon. Because no portions of hatchery-produced king salmon are marked with an adipose fin clip and tagged with a cotovir tag, catches can be sampled to generate hatchery contribution estimates for specific terminal harvest areas. Other methods can be used to identify hatchery origin fish and terminal harvest catches. However, it's not possible to determine if the king salmon is from a hatchery. So, yeah, it goes on to say you can't distinguish them.
Well, it seems there is a lot of questions that this proposal can't resolve. And I think they're good questions. But I think my inclination is either to TNA this or I would say TNA. I think I really want to go ahead.
Yeah, let me ask Claude a question. Claude, just when I was on the board, I don't think that there's any hatcheries that go harvest king salmon, or no hatcheries that produce king salmon harvest king salmon in a Dan Sane fishery. I don't think they do.
Not in Prince William Sound. I'm just more familiar with the Prince William Sound area. And I don't know of any. It's all chum and pinks down there. So I don't know anywhere else in the state if there is one. I mean, we have one for the, you know, this crystal hatchery in southeast that contributes to the troll fishery some, but that's all I know of.
Yeah, I think all the cost recovery fisheries that are done are they're either catching. They're mostly done on pinks and chums, but they may do some on sockeye, but, none of them are done. They shouldn't be catching again kings, and besides that, over half of the kings that they catch in Southeast Alaska and commercial fisheries are all hatchery produced, and if my memory's right, it's about 80% are actually hatchery fish. They're not wild fish. They're catching down there. Do you have any idea on that?
Rich, I want to jump in on this one because that was my fishing ground. The Main Bay has a sockeye hatchery, and I have fished inside both the THA and the SHA, excuse me. And I've never caught a king in that THA or SHA because the hatchery's tucked in there, and also the wild king run is pretty minimal on that western side. I think the greater chance of this being a problem is on the eastern side. But I don't think I can't think of a place it would really apply going up the Copper River. So
yeah, Virgil and the staff comments, they only present Southeast Alaska numbers.
Right.
Oh, so if there were, I think if there are other king salmon hatchery fish being caught out there, they would have provided that information.
I think so too. Anyway, okay. It's probably just a bit of time for us to even talk about it.
Hey, Gail, this is Al.
Go ahead, Al.
So just because I'm naive on this one, what's the importance of then, clipping the fin, if the head pose fin, if it's not, it can't be distinguished as a hatchery fish or a wild fish?
Good question, Al. Anybody from the department, can they answer that?
I think I can.
Hey, go ahead, Virgil.
Okay, if he's going to have a nose, coated wire nose tag in its nose, or it's going to have a thermomarked otolith, one or the other, but they do catch wild fish, like the guys that were doing it in the Copper River, and I know Claude can answer this, and I think I might be correct. When they were doing their studies of the Chinook salmon, they were clipping the adipose fin and then sticking a nose tag in so that you could tell what system that came out of, right, Claus?
That is correct. We could distinguish Gulcana, Upper Copper, Plutina, and so forth. And so I think when they said they can't distinguish it, they can't distinguish it externally. So they clip it, and that just tells you they need to dig into the head and find out exactly where it was produced.
Shane, go ahead.
So they just don't clip all the fish either. So those coated wire tags are expensive for that hatchery. So, you know, depending on the stock, they might only clip like a fifth of their fish.
Wow.
You know, I think that this thing should be amended so that they would have to return the head to turn the head into fish and game. That way, if some of those that causes crew, caught their wild fish, they caught them right up in the headwaters of those rivers before they out-migrated, or when they were out-migrating, and sucked the nose tags in with clipped adipose fins so they can find out where in the hell they're getting caught at and et cetera. They should have to return the heads of them.
Yeah, we're sampling all the commercial catches. Those kings get screened, and we're looking for those clips.
I mean, if the hatcheries are out there cleaning them up and they stand up king salmon, do that to those two.
Yes.
This is Mark. I move that we TNA this one. Move on.
This is a follow-up question before you TNA it. What is there any regulation that says what percentage or how much of the hatchery fish have to be clipped fins or nose tag?
This is Shane. It's really going to depend on what the hatchery is and what the stock is within that hatchery. Some hatcheries will change how many are being tagged depending on the stock. So
isn't that kind of deceiving then?
Well, I think it's more just you run into a cost issue because the cheaper way of tagging the fish is with the otoliths. And as far as I'm aware, nobody is otolith marking and clipping the fins. It just costs a lot of money to clip, basically.
Well, I understand, but we're in a time of shortage, and now we don't know what is hatchery fish and what is wild fish.
Yeah, it's just an ongoing issue. And this is not just in Alaska. This is from, all the states that are producing hatchery fish in the West.
I would recommend more just TNA. It seems like a bigger issue.
Well, Al, what I'm going to put in a note is because this is, it is a bigger issue. And I guess we could say something, but for Wednesday's discussion, I'm just going to say that changes to TNA, but uses the basis for future proposals according to the minutes. And I don't know if that is appropriate enough, but because I think what we're talking about is an entirely different proposal.
Okay, thanks, Gail.
Yeah, but that's up to the group. So, any other comments from the AC members as to what they want to do with 160? Okay, so going on to 161, we had recommended TNA on that one. That's on the ground fishery resources and not really affecting us. Any question on 161? And if anybody from the department wants to correct us on any of our assumptions, please let me know right away. Okay, 162, on the Kenai River Special Management Area, this was to require a DNR decal to serve as proof of ADF&G Sport Fishing Guide vessel registration. And while I think that's a concept we should be looking at for other reasons, it wasn't appropriate for this, applicable for this proposal, so we said TNA. Any objections to that? All right, now we're getting a fun one. So we're going to start with 163, and the department is here to walk us through the department comments on these. And we'll begin, and who wants to speak to 163 from the department?
I can speak to that.
Okay,
So I think the genesis of this might go back to the Prince William Sound meeting where there's that proposal to prevent guiding in the Glen Allen sub-district, correct?
Yeah, correct, yes.
And so basically what came out of that, and so now we have guide fishing services is how it's defined, and that's prohibited only in the Copper River right now. And it says you can't compensate when the guide is, when they use the term guide, they're saying they're helping in the take of the fish. That's important to distinguish. And they, you don't, it doesn't allow you to compensate for, taking the fish. That means any kind of payment, but it does let the person reimburse, for, you know, gas for the day and beer and food and whatever else they decide they want to do. So I think this is just another step to prohibit guide service in personal use fisheries, which would include Chitna, Kenai, and wherever else. There's lots of PU fisheries, but I think those are the two that it's primarily targeted at. And so it was a close vote in Prince William Sound. It was a difference of one. And the department's opposed to this proposal because it says allowing guide service on stocks with a harvestal surplus provides an option for Alaska to access the fisheries resources and provide small business opportunity. So that's their position on it.
Thank you very much. That was a good summary. And we had quite a discussion on that.
Gail, can I,
go ahead,
I just correct Klaus on that, that vote at Cordova was just for subsistence fishery.
Oh, you're right. Yes.
Personal use didn't come in enter it.
Yeah, thank you.
All the example I was using was for the subsistence fishery, and so it's just kind of translating to personal use is my point. But thank you for that, Chuck.
You bet. And the other comment is the reason that vote got swayed that way is because in the language of the subsistence law, it talks about non-commercial. So they were able to twist that a little bit to outlaw guides in the subsistence fishery there. Which doesn't, it's nothing's mentioned like that in personal use.
Good point, Chuck. Thank you. We were very strongly opposed to this at the last meeting, which is reflected in your minutes. So I'm going to assume that we're going to take that same position.
Yeah, Gail, this is Al.
Go ahead, Al.
Yeah, and I think the Board of Fish at that time for the subsistence on determining non-commercial was greatly taken out of context because they never defined what's commercial and what's customary in trade and barter, where people are allowed to exchange dollar bills for services.
Yeah, that's a point. Good point. Thank you. Okay, so we're going to recommend opposing this proposal. And 164, to establish registration reporting requirements for personal use guides and transports. Transporters, we recommended more research and discussion on this. So before we go into deliberations, I would like to talk with, I would like Klaus maybe to review the department's comments.
Yeah, sure. So right now there are no requirements for registration to harvest reporting for business that that provide outfitting, transport, and guide service to Alaska residents participating in personal use fisheries, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have it for like saltwater guiding. There's guide licensing requirements, and they have the saltwater guide logbook that there's requirements for reporting in that so they can track all the harvest. And sport fishing, we used to have a freshwater guide logbook that went away in 18, I think it was.
Yeah.
Or 17, 18. And so we don't have that. And sport fishing, you're required to register as a business owner, as a guide. So there's a registration process. And in sport fisheries, all the harvest is, except for saltwater, it comes out of statewide harvest survey. So in the personal use fisheries, we have permits that can stipulate reporting requirements, right? Like in the Chitna, everybody has to report by October 31. So, you know, the department's comments are neutral on this. So I think in areas where the department, I think, has a need for more real-time reporting, that they can put that on a permit if they so want to. But in general, they do it like end of the season. So officially, the department's neutral on this one.
Okay, thank you,
Paul. Yeah, this is Chuck.
Go ahead, Chuck.
Yeah, and this is very then akin to requiring reporting within 5 days of catching your fish in a personal use. They've consistently at the Board of Fish meetings when stuff like that comes up, they tell the Board, Fish and Game tells the Board that information, in-season information, is not needed because they manage the fishery by actual sonar counts. So,
right.
And, you know, so the part about registering transporters and guides, you know, that one, I don't know. You know, what we want to do on that, but the reporting side where a guide or transporter has to keep track of how many fish that are harvested by his clients, that's useless. they will not use that to manage the fishery.
I agree totally, Chuck. I recommend that we do not support this proposal at all.
Okay.
Yeah, Gail, this is Alan. Yeah, I support Chuck. The information that a transporter could add to the already traditional historical knowledge or, you know, historical harvest data of a sport for a personal use fishery is insignificant. It's just fish counted. They have decades of, you know, traditional harvest on that population, so... Why burden the transporter with additional paperwork that's insignificant to the fishery?
Well, that's the whole point. It would be insignificant to the fishery.
And Chuck's last comment is that they've placed if you do not report at the end of the season, you will lose your permit for the following year. And they are very strict on that now. And it's... when they put that into effect, it's cut down the number of people that didn't report for a lot.
Yeah, I bet. That's a good point. Any more comments?
They do have good information at the end of the season.
Yeah,
that's
what
they need.
That is correct. Yeah, that is correct, Chuck. Thank you. Okay, if there's no more comment on 164, we're going to recommend no support.
I'm not real wild about it.
Oh, okay. And somebody's got an open mic.
Get all over the thing. I can't eat that.
Okay. Somebody's got an open mic. Is that you, Virgil?
Oh, she heard us.
Yes, that's me.
Yeah, you need to vote. We don't know what you're laughing about. We enjoy the party.
She brought up pudding for me to eat and dropped it.
Uh-oh. Well, you better mute yourself. Okay, we're going on to 165. This is prohibit compensation for guide services and subsistence fisheries. And we recommended opposing this at the last meeting. Klaus, do you want to read just the department's recommendation?
Yeah, so just the recommendation, we're neutral on this. Allowing guide services to participate in subsistence fisheries provides an option for Alaskans to access fishery resources and generate small business opportunity. However, it is a business opportunity on a fishery that by statute should be non-commercial, what Al was alluding to. Also, is the board's authority to determine if it is a customary and traditional. Hmm. And then it also goes on to say the board may want to consider whether or not this reduces reasonable opportunity to harvest fish and shellfish.
Well, I would say that one's obvious. Thank you for that. I'm still strongly oppose this. Any other comment from AC members?
Yeah, I have some comments. There were some guys down at the board meeting. I just came back from the AREM board meeting. Anyway, and being for totally closed from the Yukon, they are getting a lot of customers, and I know of a lot of people from Nenana going down, and they don't have a boat down on the Copper River, and et cetera, and they're using these services to get their fish. And so I think we should strongly oppose this guy's proposal, probably. I didn't study the proposal real good, but I know what the history of those guys from down there is, and I'll just tell you what happened. I know that there's while we were there in Anchorage, there were already over 400 public comments on these proposals. And so I have breakfast early in the morning at the hotel, and the guy from Kenai River Sport Fish and I have coffee together early in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning. And John Jensen was down there and he got a cup of coffee and all of a sudden starts talking up.
Rico, we lost you.
Okay, I can't believe I did that. Okay, I'll start over.
Well, you were talking, you were having coffee with John Jensen. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I was talking to John Jensen and Ruben, and John's saying they've got over 400 public comments already for the statewide meeting. I said, yeah, they're mostly, because I had talked to Art, the executive director, and they're mostly on these dipnet proposals that we're talking about right now, and I figured they're probably from someone from Cordova District Fishermen United, and I made a comment like that, and John Jensen got so mad at me, he got up and left, and didn't even drink his coffee. I've been screwing with the dip netters as long as I can remember, so... Anyway, I'm always against everything they want.
Right.
They're just great ads.
Yeah, no, that was perfectly obvious for anybody at that Cordova meeting.
Yeah, Gail, this is Al.
Go ahead, Al.
You know, so when people get down into the weeds about non-commercial, you know, when I read the statute and the definition of what subsistence fisheries are, you know, it's talking about what you do with the fish. Not how you catch the fish. And so I think, you know, the non-commercial part doesn't apply to guide services that may be teaching you where and what areas to care. You know, there's almost an implication that, you know, some of these people are actually teaching you traditional knowledge and where the fish are at and how to catch them, which is separate from the non-commercial part. The non-commercial part comes in is what you do with your fish after you have captured those fish or harvested those fish. That's how I interpret the statute under the definition of subsistence.
Oh, that's interesting, Al.
I have another comment, Gail.
Yeah.
And the reason this was passed in the Glen Allen Subdistrict, too, one of the reasons is because the Otna people actually backed this, you know, eliminating guides and subsistence. And I know that because their representatives kind of gloated about it after it passed. And Merritt was behind their feelings too. So.
Hmm.
Yep. You know, to go along with Chuck, you know, guides could act as elders and teachers on where and how and how you and where fish can be caught, you know, passing on traditional knowledge. But again, it boils down to once you have the fish in your possession, what you do with it after that, that's when the non-commercial part applies.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point. So what does everybody want to do with this? I'm still opposing this big time. What's your feeling?
Oppose for Chuck.
Okay. John Siegfried?
Yeah, this is Virgil. I oppose it too.
Okay. John Siegfried?
I just said I oppose it.
Okay. Mark Richards? Okay, John.
I think you're fine going with unanimous consent, but okay. I'm with you.
Okay, sounds great. All right, thank you all, and we'll go on to 166. Which we recommended opposing, establish a statewide bag limit for personal use finfish fisheries. I'm very strongly opposed to this, and that's reflected in our minutes. Any comments from the AC members?
This is Chuck.
Go ahead, Chuck.
The stickler in this is, I can see where many board members could be convinced that, you know, keeping a person limited to the one harvest limit under a single permit. Where, okay, this guy that submitted this proposal is a Cordova drift gill netter.
Right.
I know him. And,
yep, me too.
Yeah, and he's mostly concerned about South Central and the Copper River.
Right.
You know, personal use fisheries.
Right.
And he's looking at, well, one person could go and harvest the full permit, load off of each permit, you know. In other words, a person could go to South Central, get a full permit harvest there, and then also go to Copper River, go full permit harvest there. Now that's what's going to come up down there. But I talked to Fish and Game, and I actually had them do some research into the permits, South Central and Copper River for just the last 2 years. And there were quite a number of people that did get both permits. Let's see, in 2022, there were 1,745 people got a South Central and let's see.
Are those just permits, Chuck, or are those harvests?
Let me look at this here. permits fished. Okay, there was actually 1,700 households that got both permits, but only 1,242 fished.
That was my question, yeah.
Okay. Now, the average number of people in those households was 3.3 to 3.5 people, which puts their annual limit under one of those permits, either the Chitna or the South Central, because they're the same harvest limits. In 2022, they were harvesting 51.8 fish, and they're actually, they're allowed 50 fish under one permit. So they were right in that ballpark of getting what their family needed for under one permit. In 2021, there was 1,865 permits for both fisheries that were garnered and by households, and 1,217 of those were actually fished. In 2021, in South Central, the average harvest on those permits was 24.02 fish, just 24 fish. And under the Chitna, it was 24.01. So that's 48, a little over 48 fish per household. And again, the households were 3.3 to 3.5, which gives them about a 50 fish limit. So they were, again, in 21, right at meeting their household limit under one permit. So I don't see, there's actually no problem why they have to set a statewide limit, you know.
You know,
I'm actually looking for other reasons why I can oppose this too. So.
No, I appreciate all that work, Chuck, and I would really like to see that. Is that in the CNA commentary?
Is that what?
Is that in the Chitna Dip Knitters commentary?
No, this was after I got this information after I submitted. But
could you say
I'm going to make a trip down there. I don't think I'll be there for a public comment on Friday.
Okay, could you send those comments to the AC so we can discuss that on Wednesday?
I can do that.
Yeah, that'd be important to have in front of us. I think before we get into the department's comments, I think my issue with all this is that you've got a relatively, and you just pointed out, Chuck, a relatively low number. It sounds like a lot, you know, 1,200 permits that were fished. But the reality of that is that even that fish, and they got their full, you know,
allocation.
Thank you. Getting tired. And their full allocation on each of those fisheries, it's still not going to amount to a hoot and holler in comparison to other fisheries. And it's not going to. And the other side of that coin is, this is a really important thing. I think all of these fisheries are still managed by escapement. And so, therefore, they're already managed. And I don't care if you've got a double permit. I really could care less. If people need to get that, if they need to go to that effort to get fish for their family, let them go for it. We know that there has been some abuse of this system in the past, and probably still goes on in a minor way. But for the most part, this is hard work. And if people are going to go out there and get fish for their family, if you have a large family, you can go through 50 salmon in a year in a heartbeat. So I am opposed to this on many different levels.
Yeah, Gail, this is Al.
Hey, Al.
I would also like to see the statistics on commercial fish side on how many permit holders have a double or triple opportunity to harvest the same species under a different method as means and obtain their quota.
Well, you know, that raises the issue of home packs.
Yeah.
And
there
you know how I feel about home packs.
that's why I said earlier, well, maybe they need an annual limit too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, that could be our total commentary is that, okay, if you do this, there should be an annual limit on home pack, and people will go ballistic. Anyway. That was my thought.
Stirring the pot, Gail.
Wow. You need to keep people awake during a board meeting. Okay. So can we get the department's comments just for the record?
Sure. So the department's opposed, and like you said, it would unnecessarily restrict Alaskans' ability to participate in PU fisheries, potentially restrict harvest of available surplus production, and require new reporting method for the permit holder and the department.
Great. I think that'll kill it right there. Thank you. Okay, so we're opposed, and we're going to go on to 166. We just did that. I'm sorry. 167. And that is requiring season reporting of subsistence and personal use salmon to harvest within 5 days of harvest. Strongly opposed to that. We had a long discussion at the last meeting, and I'd like to hear more from other AC members. Oh, well, before we do that, Klaus, can you read the department's recommendation on 167 very quickly?
Department opposes this proposal. A regulatory requirement of mandatory reporting within 5 days of harvest of personal use and subsistence fisheries is unnecessary. Department already has an authority under 5AAC, et cetera, to require this level of reporting in areas where subsistence and personal use permits are issued. So the department can issue permits. The department currently does not require this frequent of reporting for in-season management. In addition, burden would be placed on users. The requirement would have to be, would be challenging to enforce, and this would place a significant additional budgetary and administrative burdens on department.
Great. There it is. Thank you.
But Klaus, this Chuck, I'm really surprised they didn't put anything in there about, you know, managing the fishery by actual sonar counts. Or I guess that's, I guess I'm talking, yeah, I guess I'm only talking the Copper River, though.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So that's unique for there.
Yeah, I think they're just speaking explicitly to the proposal, which just says require harvest reporting, right? Not, so there's kind of keeping it within the small window of addressing that as opposed to going the outside of that.
Yeah, Gail, I got a question for Klaus.
Go ahead.
So, Klaus, how many, subsistence fisheries is permits are required on the road system. So how many subsistence fisheries, you know, outside the road system exist versus the road system?
Man, I know there's a lot of ones out there. I think Caroline or Alita might be able to speak to that better, or even Shane, as far as like the number of subsistence fisheries out there.
Well, it seems that the road
there's
system
a lot.
Where permits required is insignificant to the statewide perspective of, you know, a permit's not required.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of subsistence for fisheries out there without a permit.
Yes. Basically, it's all the ones off the road system.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Where they need a control harvest. Go, Shane.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to speak statewide, but certainly in the Yukon area, most of our stuff is not on the permit system.
Yeah. Or the Kuskokwim.
Kuskokwim as well.
Okay. Yeah, Gail, this is Jim Simon. Just jumping in here to share my perspective.
Yeah.
Al is right. You know, the AYK region is largely without subsistence fishing permit requirements, with the exception of the roaded area. The rest of the state, most areas require a subsistence fishing permit already, where with permit, discretionary permit authority, the department can vary the report number of days, et cetera, to some extent, and then can go to the board for those case by case, on a case by case basis. Applying this to the AYK region where a permit is not required is really seemingly unnecessary burden for administrative purposes, which I agree with the department's staff comments in that regard. So, yeah, this is a statewide thing that would cost a lot more money than it would actually gain because of the way the fisheries are managed. And frankly, the relatively low harvest compared to roaded areas with large urban populations that also participate in those fisheries. Thanks.
Yeah, good
hey,
comment. Good comment.
Gail, this is Mark. Yeah, I just wanted to confirm. So I left the Upper Yukon in 2015, but in the 30-plus years I was there, I was always required to have a subsistence fishing permit. Is that something that recently changed in the last 7 years?
No, it's still the same for you guys, for where you are, but not for other areas of the state, not in the Kuskokwim, for instance. That's what Jim was talking about.
Well, I thought you guys were saying there were no permit requirements on the Yukon.
Not on the Kuskokwim. Down the Cusco.
But they are on the Yukon, right?
Yes, they are. Right.
Only portions of the Yukon.
Only portions.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for clarification.
And adjacent to the roaded areas. Yeah, in the corridor.
Well, that wouldn't have applied to where Mark was then. Because now I'm confused.
Yeah, I always had to have a subsistence fishing permit for gillnet. Every year, and we had reporting requirements that we had to report our harvest.
But you by Eagle, that's why. Eagle has to have a permit and reporting requirements.
Yeah, this was on the Gander.
Yeah, Mark would be on the upper Canada permit. There's an upper Canada permit, there's a Circle Eagle permit, there's a Rampart permit, there's a permit for the bridge area. If you're up by Fort Yukon, though, you don't need a permit. If you're down, you know, Ruby, Galena, anywhere, you know, down the lower river, you don't need a permit. So it really depends. We have, I think, I don't know, like 7 permits or whatever throughout the drainage. But for the most part, if you're in the Canada, you need a permit or off the road system.
Well, that would certainly be interesting to look into the history of that because it's so patchwork. But for purposes of tonight, I think we're going to just say we unanimously oppose 167. Is that correct? And thank you, Shane, for that. That's good clarification. Okay, so we're moving on. We're getting close. Moving on to 168. And that's to extend emergency order authority to allow restrictions to support fisheries in contaminated waters. We recommended further discussion at the last meeting. If somebody from the – let me see what we said. If we considered it a housekeeping basically is what Andy Griska has said. I don't know why we wanted more information. It just seems like we should just support it, but I don't know. What's the pleasure of the AC? And Klaus, could you read the department's?
Sure. Yeah. So the department submitted and supports this proposal. And when we initially started dealing with PFAS in waters, it was always in stock lakes is where it was being identified, and we didn't have a way to allow people to go catch and release in a contaminated water body. And so I think it was an oversight or maybe wishful thinking that we wouldn't have PFAS in flowing waters. And so what this does is just makes it for all waters as opposed to just stock lakes. So in a sense, housekeeping.
Good. Thank you very much. I am going to recommend that we support this. I don't see any downside to it. Other AC members, comment, please.
This is John, I'll support that.
Okay, thank you. Mark, you have a comment on that? Any, John, we haven't heard from you for a while. Do you have any comment on that?
Sorry, Gail, I couldn't get to mute button. This is Mark. No, I'm with you on that. And same thing for the next one.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, Gail.
Okay, great.
Chuck's the parts.
All right.
Merger too.
Okay, thanks, Virgil. We get unanimous support. So last proposal is 169, and we had, it says amend the list of banned invasive species. It said further discussion, and I don't know why we said that. We had some reason that we wanted a further discussion on this, and I guess maybe we just wanted to hear from the department. Klaus, do you want to read the department's recommendations? This is the
So currently all banned invasive species are on a single list, and this is going to create two lists. One that you don't want in the state of Alaska in any form, dead or alive, right? And the other list is for ones that you can, that are dead, but you can transport without a permit. This is like, and so like some of the species that are going to be on the new list include perch, muskie, walleye, so people can come from Minnesota with their walleye frozen and share it with their friends and be legal.
Ah, okay. All right. Go ahead. Big for this. Al, did you have a comment?
Oh, I like perch, so I like them frozen. Right. In here.
Yeah, me too. What am I thinking of? This little sun, sunfish.
Well, sunfish or crappies?
Crappies. Yeah, little sunfish.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the Midwest thing. Okay, so we're going to recommend support, and this is the housekeeping, and can I have unanimous consent on that recommendation? Hearing no objection, we are concluded on the deliberations. Great job, guys.
Okay. Okay. See everybody Wednesday night, then.
Okay, we have one more piece of information, Chuck.
Okay.
Sorry. As most of you probably know, first of all, on Wednesday, we're going to have to get, I'll clean this up. We'll get the support from the AC, and then that goes to the board. The other item was that the Hatchery Committee was canceled for 2023, and I think we should have that discussion at another date about objecting to that and why, and finding out why. It wasn't just canceled for down the road, it was canceled for the entire year. So, and that was because their AM was just so time-consuming, I guess, that issue right now. So,
let me say something about this. What it is the board's support is underfunded. That's what it is. They only funded the board for so many meetings, and it took two extra days at this last meeting. They only scheduled one day for public comments, public testimony, and we had to have 3 days of public testimony. I don't know why they couldn't get that out in advance, but.
Right.
No, but that's the reason why, and whenever they realized that they weren't going to, it was going to take 3 days for public testimony, that's when they decided not to have a hatchery meeting. But that's in the codified regulations. They're supposed to do that every year, and so that's, I need to talk to Chief Ridley about that. They should have a special meeting for the hatchery committee this year, not wait until for a full year. Or maybe have it in the fall, along with when they have a work session or something.
Virgil, let's have that discussion on Wednesday, because I do know other AC members feel very strongly about this as well, and I agree with you. So maybe we can work up a plan of action on Wednesday briefly. But we should not let this go by. There's no question.
Right.
Okay.
Hey, Gail or Virgil. This is Chris. Can someone tell me why 150 didn't pass? I missed that in the beginning. I was
on 140. Yeah, 140 didn't pass because of money and greed. You want to know the real reason? At Area M, and
what did they?
We only have four votes.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay.
Assessment.
Okay. All right. I appreciate it. I couldn't stay through the whole thing. I had to fly home on Friday, so
I missed out on all the excitement. Chris, I don't mean to be snarky about it, but we can talk about that later, and I can give you all the details. There was,
yeah, I'd appreciate it.
But that really was the bottom reason, right, Virgil?
That's correct.
Yeah, I figured that was the case when I left. But, you know, we did have like 242 people testify for 140. 40 of them I brought with me. So
good for
you. It wasn't like it wasn't supported by the public, which will be very difficult for the board to have to answer to one day.
These are all good reasons to help with the TCC petition for reconsideration.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, I appreciate it. I'm gonna sign off. Have a great day, Gail.
Yeah, you too. Go ahead.
You know, Gail, I don't think 140 passed or didn't pass because of, you know, money or anything else. I think it was mainly because member Woods got his feelings hurt. And he didn't have his RC even make the light of day. And the other thing was the commissioner, rightly so, bringing up that, you know, what if chums come in between windows? You know, what do you want me to do? I think the commissioner was the biggest one on that by leading to, if the run comes in between windows, how do you want me to stop, you know, commercial fishing in the area I am?
Al, technically I agree with you, but the bottom line is that what was driving all of this, the processes were way behind us, very quietly behind the scenes, driving on to this discussion, and it was all about money.
No, the processes were there.
Yeah, I was online, so, you know, I apologize, so I only get to hear what people let me hear.
Right.
I ran into one processor in the back, didn't realize he was a processor. That was from Petersburg. But the one processor for the company for Silver Bay, she was there the whole meeting, in and out of there. And they had a war room upstairs.
Yeah, I had lunch with her. She didn't know who I was, so it was very entertaining.
Oh, good.
I want to
hear that.
Yeah,
it was added information.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, you just have to be nice to people. And, you know, when they're passionate about stuff, they're gonna spout out at the mouth and not realize who they're talking to.
Unless they know us. You got away with it, Chris, because she didn't know you. But
yeah,
I couldn't get away with that. Neither could Virgil.
No, I saw them run around Virgil. All right. You guys have a good night.
You too. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think any last comments from the public? You want to add anything? Thank you all for hanging in there. I invite you to join the meeting on Wednesday, the full AC, which will also include game issues. Mark, is there anything you want to say about what's going to happen Wednesday that I don't know about?
No, we are going to discuss joint board proposals and Region 3 and Region 5 Board of Game proposals.
Got it.
For next year.
Got it. Great. And is this a preliminary discussion and proposal?
Yes, it's a good idea. So then we'll have a game trap subcommittee meeting before our April meeting, and then we'll hopefully get confirmation on what the AC wants to submit.
Great. Thank you, Mark. Okay. Thank you to ADF&G staff for joining us tonight and for clarifications. We really appreciate it. And appreciate all your hard work. And thank you all. And everybody has been working very hard lately. So thank you all. And with that, it's 8:07:19, and we're going to adjourn. Good night, all.
Night.
Night.
That's 8:19.
Oh, thank you. You're right.
Thanks, everybody.
I need my glasses on.